All right, what do we got here?
Well, that's Atomic Rooster, isn't it?
It sounds like Atomic Rooster.
Atomic Rooster. Good one, Liz.
All right.
Speaking out some good ones already. Yeah, that's from the, let's see, what's that? Break the Ice from their In Hearing Of album.
In Hearing Of, yeah. Atomic Rooster.
I love this album cover. Just this little old bent over blue-haired lady in kind of a, looks like she's been to the ballroom and back a few times.
Yeah.
And kind of, she's up in, looks like she's in a cloud, so she's probably dead or near dead. And kind of hunched over with her with a gramophone horn to her ear, like she's deafer than hell. So
yes,
In Hearing Of Atomic Rooster, beautiful record. Actually, 1971. It's a great record. You know, we love our Atomic Rooster.
Yeah,
around here.
Where'd you find this one? These are hard to find.
Yeah, where did I find this one? I found this one at. I got this one out of town. I might have got this at the Man Cave.
Oh, in Jersey.
I might have got this one. I got one.
Randy's Man Cave,
shout out to Bordentown, New Jersey.
That's right, yeah. We found some cool stuff there.
Yeah, some great stuff there.
I like this, cool groove.
Great. Yeah, good old stuff, good old British rock.
Well, shall we get cracking?
Let's crack, I enjoy that.
Good night.
Me too.
It's Neil Merriweather.
Neil Merriweather.
I'm on the Hipster Free Classic Vinyl Podcast. You've all been searching for. Now that you found it, get with it. Shabby Road Show.
Well, hey, Laba!
Hey, Laba!
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and now, parental guidance suggested for strong language and sexual situations. It's A.D. Adams!
Well, that's right. I'm nude from the waist up. Well, hello, vinyl lovers everywhere, and welcome to the plush and opulent confines of Shabby Road, the world's shittiest studio. And when I say plush and opulent, I mean dank and DNA speckled. So don ye now your hazmat apparel as we stagger through yet another abomination we call the Shabby Road Record Show. We apologize in advance.
Right on.
How's it going, Ryan?
It's going good, man.
I stumbled through that.
You did. You got through it. That's what's important.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, let's say hi to Liz Morgan, who's running the controls. Woo-hoo! Over there.
Hello,
so
Liz.
Hi, guys.
Yes. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Ready to hear some great vinyl records, I hope?
Always.
Now, yeah. You're missing someone. What happened to Sal?
She is taking a little bit of a road trip.
She's out whoring, is what
she's doing.
Is
she out whoring? What's she doing?
She's out whoring.
Spreading her circuitry.
She's getting her bits worked over.
Getting her chassis lubed, getting her keyboard lubed.
And you hear the deep voice of our good friend Bear, who's sitting in with us tonight. What's up, Bear?
Hey, thank you guys. Glad to be here. I'm gonna have a ball.
Yes, and dude, Bear brought a big pan, and I'm talking a big pan of insane ribs.
Oh, my God.
And some serious spuds, garlic spuds that are just hitting the spot right now. Dude, thank you.
Always, brother. Thank you so much.
And he brought an armful of records, too. He just goes, here, some records. Well, you got Billie Holiday in here. You got some Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs.
There's a Rod Stewart album.
A couple Rod Stewart records in there.
Bob Ezrin produced. I didn't know Bob Ezrin did. I had no idea.
Yeah. I saw that.
What one was that?
I don't know the name of it. I got to look it up. But yeah, I swiped that one.
That's good. Wow. So thank you.
Anytime, brother. Thank you so much for taking them off my hand. I got so many.
Oh, dude, good to have you in here, though. We met last week.
Yes,
and
we did.
It was a lot of fun. So it was like, you got to come back. We're going to give you a mic this time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I got to take it home with me.
So keep an eye on that guy.
So he's going to crack wise with us here as we, AD and I each have our three records. And so Bear's going to sit in and make jokes along with us here as we're prone to do here at Shabby Road.
Yes, and there's a lot to make fun of around here. So,
and before we get those
have at it, my friend.
Before we get those records cooking, let's give a shout out to our friends over at NameOnAnything.com. AD.
Oh, NameOnAnything.com. If I had a dime for every time I pulled a pitcher out of the fridge and it turned out to be urine samples, I'd be a rich man.
Oh my God!
I'm going to tell you something. A solution to this problem, though, and I know just where to find it. NameOnAnything.com. Containers of all sizes, clearly customized with your beverage of choice: apple juice, orange juice, pineapple juice, urine sample. I'll never make that mistake again. Containers for your liquids, customized and labeled so you won't serve pee to your overnight guests or make urine sample screwdrivers ever again. nameonanything.com.
You'll save 10% if you mention Shabby Road Wreckage Show when you are putting your order together. So zip on over to nameonanything.com right now. Start getting your name printed up on anything under the sun.
Mm-hmm. Or in the fridge.
Mm-hmm. Or in the fridge.
Nice. Always make sure you crack
Sister's
open your
pee,
own
man.
Beer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Some of this you got to keep at room temperature.
Well, how's your mystery box looking there, AD?
My mystery box, as it's weird, it has two themes tonight.
Okay.
One, it was in, I kind of put two songs together, and then I went, oh, like, I'm starting to see a thing, so I made a theme of that. So that was totally by design. The other was totally by coincidence. So my themes tonight is, one is that they're all, what is it? I'm going to call this my Golden Pipes box.
Ooh, good
great
singers.
Great singers, great live, great vocal performances. So this was the intentional one. The
it's one of your films, the Golden Pipe.
The Golden Pipes. Well, it was the sort of the Dusty Pipes, if you know what I'm saying. Mm.
It didn't have anything to do with singing.
You were in that movie, was that Russian chick, what was her name, Olive? Oliver Klozoff.
Ah, yes, yes. Yes.
I know her.
We all know
Bear's
her.
Bear's been down that road.
Yeah. That's my sister.
But the,
we'll talk later.
Yeah. Hey, Cox's Glock. But the other theme that has going is that they're all from accidentally, totally, by coincidence, 1972. So
hey.
Yeah, so this box is packed tonight tighter than Beyonce's box in the L.A. locker, L.A. Lakers locker room.
Oh, Jesus.
Thank you.
Well, before I tell you what's in my mystery box here, let's give a shout out to our old buddy G-Man.
Oh, yay. G-Man.
The beloved Gary Gilson dropped by the website shabbyroadrecordshow.com, and he got us a round of beers, AD.
Oh, thank
and
you,
Bear
Gary.
And Liz.
Awesome.
Feel free to drink as much as you want, Bear.
And I am.
I think Bear can drink like five beers at once, being his size, right?
Yep.
I think Gary should drop the beer off himself one night.
He has.
But again, you know what? One thing I forgot to mention, I was going to mention during my segments, but since you brought it up, two of my selections are from Gary.
Really?
And are really cool.
He is here in spirit tonight.
He is, man. He's all over the room.
Well, you too can buy us a round of beers. If you visit that website, you'll see that frosty mug of beer, and there's a PayPal link right underneath. It's as simple as that. Just click on how many beers you want to give us, and the money goes right into the fridge. And AD ran to the liquor store this time and picked up the Dundee's Honey Brown Ale
sure
that,
did.
Awesome. That we're all partaking in this evening.
Oh, yeah, so thank you, stuff. G-Man.
G-Man.
So my mystery box is a little, it's a little kind of all over the place. I got a 1972 record just like you have.
Oh, wow.
We get to play our favorite argument, I guess, argument game of supergroup or...
I say supergroup, yeah.
A long forgotten supergroup from the early 70s. First timers on the show.
Okay.
Actually, all three of my records are first timers on the show.
Well, that makes five selections tonight are first timers.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes. That's nice. Not easy to do week after week.
That's tough. It is.
So that's going to be a great record. It's a great fun. Just an orgy of fuzzy, ripping guitar, big vocals, and horns.
Orgy and fuzzy in the same sentence, Barry. He's
fuzzy
got
orgies.
Bear all lit up over there.
Yeah.
Monster.
Oh, don't you talk about that robot on that Queen album.
Yeah.
And then I got something from 1981. That's a Boston band. Era. We're from Boston.
Hey, sorry about your girlfriend there in the creek.
Wow. Another first-time group. Pretty fun little new wavy power pop type of record. And then last.
All right. This is going to be like.
Oh, no, it's not that guy. It's not in the guys that sing like this.
It's not going to be like that.
No, it's not those guys.
All right.
Mm-mm, they're not coming this week. And then my last one is a brand new band. And I was up in the mountains this week playing some gigs with my buddy Dylan, and we're driving home. Dylan's driving. He's got his music playing, and I heard this song. And I'm like, who is this, and what do they have against the one chord? Because they had this great song that I just loved, and the chords are all over the place. And
yeah.
You know how, like, musically, theoretically, you play these chords and it resolves to the one.
They never find the root.
They do briefly, but they're off of it. It's such a well-written song. And he's like, I got the vinyl at the house. As soon as we get home, I'll let you borrow it. So this was just yesterday.
Really?
So I've been listening to it all day, and I'm excited to share it from 2008.
Well, all right.
Yeah,
then.
So I got 70s, 80s. I skipped the 90s and I went to the aughts.
We like that 21st century. Some of that stuff's good.
Yeah.
I think we're finding some better stuff all the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm excited about that.
Coruscant and helicopters and all that stuff, man. Mm-hmm. That's just great stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's a good time for music.
It is.
Yeah. You can't say that.
Shitty time for the business.
Yeah, the business is in the tank.
Right?
But,
yeah.
You can't really say, like, oh, new music sucks. No, there's
not
actually
anymore,
bunch of great bands
there's
out there.
Some great bands.
They're just
there.
Hard to find.
Yeah.
You know?
Well.
So let's draw to see who's going to go first. Liz has the playing cards here. She's got the red one, the black one, and we're going to have Bear pick again. See if he picks me a second week in a row here.
Today's choice is going to be dun dun dun, the black one.
They're both white.
They're both.
Left. I'm not white.
They'll say left or right hand.
Oh, my bad. Right hand. That's my booger finger.
It black
is me.
It is the black.
Always bet on black.
Oh.
Thank you, Bear, for picking me. All right, so I shall go first then. So an orgy of fuzzy ripping guitars.
Oh, here we go.
Big vocals. This guy sounds like Tom Jones.
Flipping his switch again.
Supergroup, you ask?
Okay, let's go. Let's figure this out.
You got Mitch Mitchell on the drums.
All right.
Of course, Mitchell.
Jimi Hendrix experience.
Yep. Then you got Mike Panera on guitar. The name might sound familiar.
He's from a restaurant, Panera Bread.
Yes, that's right. Yes. A restaurateur. Yes. No, he was from Iron Butterfly. He played on the Metamorphosis record, the one that has Rhino on it from Captain Beyond. And then he also played on Ride Captain Ride by the Blues Image, and he also played with Alice Cooper from like 1980 to 1982.
Oh, that's right.
And that's all the names you'd know. So, supergroup or no?
That's it. Well, by my standards?
Yeah.
What label are they on?
They're on Atlantic.
It's a major deal. I say supergroup.
Wow. Liz, supergroup?
No.
No. I say no.
Figured you probably would.
Do you think supergroup on just the two names out of five?
You know what? I'm gonna surprise myself and say yes.
Okay. Wow. So it's
Panera,
2-2.
Panera, I should have been able to identify right away, and I stuttered on that a little bit. So, but then you go, okay, well, that's an impressive resume.
Yeah. So
not an A-lister.
There is one person in the band that we're gonna actually be talking about. And it's neither one of the two named people there. But let me introduce the band first. Please welcome to Shabby Road Record Show a band called Ramatam.
What?
Ramatam. Ramatam.
You found that how?
I don't remember how I stumbled upon this. It must have been, if you like this, you might like that type of deals. And I listened to it. I remember listening to it on Spotify. But yeah, it's kind of all over the map. This band has done stylistically. If they made two records, the styles are all over the map. I mean, what we're going to hear, of course, is the big rockin' number, side one, track one, called Whiskey Place. And this one, you got horns, but they're drowned out by the raging, fuzzy orgy of ripping guitars.
Yeah. The singer. Am I catching the last name? Is there a connection?
Are you talking about April Lawton?
Yeah.
No, Johnny, like Johnny Lawton?
Yeah.
No.
Any connection?
Not that I could find. And that's the one I want to bring up. April Lawton is actually not the singer. She's the guitarist and a ripping guitar player.
Oh,
so
just how I assumed that she was the singer.
Sexist you are.
Yeah, look at me. Oh, man, shame on me. Fuck.
Yeah, so she should be recognized for being a groundbreaking and pioneering female guitarist because she rips, and this is 1972. So when you look her up and you do some research on her, because this is so unique, the main thing you see when you research her is a particularly dastardly rumor that was circulating about her. And it sort of ties into sort of the quasi-sexist thing that you were saying, just assuming she's the lead singer. So April Lawton gave no interviews and refused to discuss her past. And she was rumored to be transsexual. In other words, she was a man, supposedly.
Hello.
April? April, how long have you been playing guitar?
Well, it's been quite a while now, but I really enjoy it.
Now, do you catch a lot of flack for being just a female guitar player in a male-dominated rock and roll industry?
Well, I'm 6'6", 300 pounds, with size double D breasts. I don't think so.
April Lawton on the show, ladies and gentlemen. What a,
wow.
From beyond the grave, she passed away.
You bet. That's definitely a super group now.
So the rumors about her indeed being a man, baby.
She is not a man. She's cute.
I don't think she's a man
at
all.
That's not a man. Dude.
Well,
is that a man to you?
Yeah, Bear's looking at her picture. She's
oh,
really cute.
Hell no.
That's not a dude. That is not a dude.
That is all woman.
Yeah,
right there. That's a dude. I am now gay. I am certified.
Yeah. Certified gay.
Yeah, I'm jumping over to the other side, too.
She is beautiful.
So the rumors are confirmed by her friend, Fanny guitarist June Millington.
In a
2010 interview. Yeah. Jane's like, oh, yeah, she was a dude. And then I'm not sure where this guy would have any authority, but singer Dee Schneider from Twisted Sister claims that April Lawton was still a man while in the band Johnny Maestro and the Brooklyn Bridge.
Wait a minute.
So Dee Schneider, yeah.
So
80s word.
April Lawton played with Johnny Maestro.
Yeah. Whose big hit was
under what name?
Yeah, no, AD, your face is red, AD.
I know.
I'm having a hard time with this because that is not a dude.
It's the worst that
Let me
can
see.
Happen.
Hit it, bud. No.
Yeah, show Liz the picture of April.
So, what name was she going under then?
I don't know the name that she would have been gone.
Well, who's the guitar player for Johnny Maestro?
I know. I got to look it up. Maybe it's something Lawton.
That can't be.
I know. Well, the guitarist, the aforementioned Mike Panera, Iron Butterfly guy, he threw his 10 cents in to this whole discussion in a statement in Guitar Player magazine. He goes, quote, "I can attest to her being a woman.
Because I saw her penis.
When I asked her... when I asked her about the rumors, she took my hand and gave me a first base account." So, breast, I guess. I would assume.
You can get breasts now, though.
But in the early 70s?
Oh, okay.
Maybe not. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe
well, third base, that's the, you know, that's the telltale base.
First base account would just be a kiss on the cheek, right?
Possibly.
Second base is getting a little hand under the shirt.
Second base is boobies.
Boobies, yeah.
We're talking third base where you need to go.
Exactly.
Oh, you need to get on third base to really clarify.
Right.
What's...
I mean, I got A cups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to give Bear a first base account?
Don't get me started. Mine are double C's. For chocolate.
So this band is short-lived. They don't go very far. They just do the two records, and that's it. Actually, after the first record, both Mitch Mitchell and Mike Panera quit. Because
things are shit's getting weird.
it was because of April, but it was more akin to her wanting to turn the band into the April Lawton band, and you know, being so unique and a shredding guitarist, female shredding guitarist, that they were having a hard time and dealing with that as the superstars that they were.
Wow!
So it was interesting, and yeah, Mike was pretty butthurt over it. And he's the one that talks about it and just like, yeah, fuck this, I'm leaving, because she just wants to do her own thing, and she was apparently being difficult to deal with. That's just according to him. So yeah, and so Mike and Mitch both leave after the first album, and then they record the second album, which has a long title and kind of a proggy title, but a very good record nevertheless. That second record too. Her guitar playing gets even better on the second record, I've noticed. But stylistically, it veers everywhere. On that second record, they do a bona fide version of Stars and Stripes Forever.
And like,
she plays it on
straight
guitar.
Bass, no.
Yeah. She plays it on guitar. It's pretty cool. She gets this really fuzzy, almost tuba kind of sound out of her guitar. It's very strange.
It's just weird.
Yeah, so Ramatam, this is their self-titled record on Atlantic 1972. We're going to listen to side one, track one, AD, and belt in, because they're just going to be rocking. It's called Whiskey Place.
Okay.
Yeah, Whiskey
wow.
Place.
Nice.
That was rather ruckus.
That is Ramatam from their self-titled record, April of 72. And what was the name of that second record, Liz, just for...
In April came the dawning of the Red Suns.
There it is. Yeah, that's how I couldn't remember that. I'm looking for that one. It's on the list. It's also pretty good.
Notice her name was in it.
Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, it becomes the April Lawton band, yeah.
Yeah.
pretty much at that point. So, yeah, there you go.
Wow,
what do you think?
I like that. So, how's the rest of the record? I mean, is the record
it's
stand
good.
Up to
it's
that?
It's weird. It does like a rocking song ballad, rocking song ballad.
Okay.
And the ballads are decent, except for one that has a fucking flute.
Does she sing?
No, she doesn't sing.
She doesn't?
No, it's all dude voices.
Huh. Well, it could be her.
Could be her, yeah.
We both recovered that fumble, my friend.
Yes. All right. So there you go. AD, what you got?
Well, you made me change my pecking order here, my selection order, because one of my selections contains some bitchin' horns and has a ruckus, real soulful, energetic groove just like that. So I'm going to have to, maybe I'll skip one and go to my what would have been my second selection. And all I have to do is say one word, Ryan. And I know I can get a rise out of you if I say...
Tall.
Slade.
Oh, there it is. The classic album, Slade.
This can't stay out of here too long. It's been a while. This might be seventh or eighth time we've played Slade on this thing. But I brought their classic Slade album, S-L-A-Y-E-D.
Uh-huh.
Ryan, I can never get tired of them. I can never get tired of the toothsome Dave Hill, the cherubic Jimmy Lee, the dreamboat drummer Don Powell, and the shouty bloke, Noddy Holder, as BBC called them on their little...
Toothy.
They did it, yeah. The toothsome Dave Hill.
Oh,
the
toothsome.
Cherubic.
Yes.
Yeah, they found this really cool little documentary on the BBC on YouTube.
Really?
A 20-minute thing. It's called It's Slade.
Oh, I'm watching
and
that.
And it's great. It's two 10-minute segments, so it's just a little 20-minute thing. And it's fantastic. It's all about Slade. And just takes it right back to the beginning. It's a real short, really cool thing. And there's interviews with all four of them. They're all, you know, separate, you know, not all together in the same room. But they're all bubbling and, oh, yeah, you know, blah, 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 you know. And it's just really, really good. And you know there's no bigger Slade fan anywhere in the world than this guy here.
Yeah.
You know.
Me too. I love him, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, this is... And I was in love with that band. Like, you know, I'd get the Circus magazines and the Cream magazines. I loved that band before I ever heard them play. Just like, look at that, you know? Dave Hill in his super yob outfit, and he dressed like a fucking fruit salad or whatever. and they were just fun from the start. And they, you know, the way they spell their words, all the words of the songs wrong. And it just, they're a fun band. But this thing got into their history, and I found it really interesting because most people know their history as, you know, the pop band and the number one selling, you know, and all that stuff with the long hair and the glitter glam thing. But then people who know Slade a little bit more also can take it further back to their quote unquote teddy boy their sort of their skinhead, you know, ruffian era.
Right. You know? You should clarify what skinhead is.
Well, yeah. Not like the current type skinhead, but the sort of rowdy boys like the kind of wearing jack boots, kind of almost like the punk, the hardcore punks now look, you know, like the hardcore punks with the suspenders.
So it wasn't
suspenders.
Like a neo-Nazi skinhead.
No. It was a different word for it. But they called them the skinheads because they all had crew cuts, military cuts, and, you know, the rolled up checkered shirts and shit. But so a lot of people then go, well, that's the beginning of Slade. And it's not, actually. There was a time when they first started where they actually did have their hair long before that.
Ambrose Slade?
Yeah, with the before Ambrose Slade.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it the same four dudes?
It was the same four guys.
Really?
Yeah. And from Wolverhampton. And so they were called the In-Betweens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so then they became Ambrose Slade, but they still had their hair. The Ambrose Slade album, if you look at the cover of that, they do have their hair on that. And that album was at that fucking record room up in Las Vegas last time, the first time I went with Gary. That cocksucker wanted fucking $100 for it. Fuck you up there, dude. Fuck you old bastard.
Yeah.
Fucking take Bear asshole. With you at next time.
Dude. Yeah. Oh, that guy. Man, anyway.
Hey, my friend Bear here doesn't allow me to spend more than $8 on any record, right, Bear?
That includes tax.
That's right.
You better watch yourself, boy.
But I mean, right, and so I had that record in my hand. He wanted, like, I don't know, dude, it was just stupid money for it. I'm like, fuck you. So yeah. Anyway, they were the in-betweens. Cool. And then, so then they went through their hair thing, you know, because of, you know, Sgt. Pepper-y era. And a little later than that, actually. And then they met Chas Chandler, of course, the bass player from The Animals, who managed Hendrix. And funny you mentioned Mitch Mitchell, a little.
Yeah.
Another Jimi Hendrix connection there. But so Chandler says to his assistant, go in the news and see what's cool, see what the trends are. And the guy go, well, there's the mods and there's the rockers and the skinheads. Oh, what are these skinheads you talking of? He goes, well, they look like this. Oh, right. Hey, boys, you need to cut your hair. You know?
Oh,
so
geez.
They're telling, so Dave Hill, they're going back and forth between the different dudes, and they're going, so, you know, he's our manager. We don't know what the fuss. So we cut our hair, we get the clothes, and we get up there and we play at all. Now we're playing. We used to have girlfriends. Our girlfriends left us because we're, right? Because they're like, fuck you. You know, and they were playing. He goes, we used to be playing in front of all these birds. Now we're playing in front of a room full of dudes. So he goes, and then we couldn't even leave our dressing room because he goes, the minute we get up on stage, they can see right through it, and then they beat us up.
Oh, so Jesus.
Like, oh, man.
So they're like, so we decided we'd probably grow our hair back. So if you remember the Ambrose Slade record, they got their hair on the Beginnings album.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one where they get the black and white one where they look like Teddy Boys on the
cover.
Yeah,
good then, record though.
Yeah, and that's the second one. This then, there's the Slade album where they really got their glam on with the silver pants, shirtless Dave Hill.
Oh yeah,
and his yob haircut.
Yeah,
you know, all giving you the thumb, the Slade sign. Yeah. You know, and it's just so it's probably the most classic glam record of that era, glam pop. There's no record that moved me more, I think, when I first got my sweaty little hands on it than that one. And it's just, you know, it's all that a great pop record should be. You know, and really, think about this. Put it into perspective. You know, they really were on the front edge of that. I mean, you got Bowie and T-Rex in 72.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Bowie in late 71 was kind of leaning toward that, but he still had a lot of the folky stuff.
Right.
But if you talk about Bowie, T-Rex, and Slade,
those
I mean,
the
that's
three.
All, they're the three acts, really, that started that entire thing. Anything else came after that, all the young dudes came out after that, even.
Oh,
when
yeah. Mott.
When Mott went, oh, what's this? You know, again, kind of following trends.
I suppose
and stuff.
We all taught it up a bit.
Right, you know.
Sure, and, yeah.
But this album took Ambrose Slade, the former Ambrose Slade and the In-Betweens, to superstardom.
Oh, God.
It became one of the biggest selling albums in Britain's history. It still is. It's just one of those.
Wow.
It sold what they had, I think, what did they say? 6 number one albums in the 70s.
Wow.
6 number one.
So, I'm sorry, singles in the 70s.
The singles, yep.
And that there's only one or, I think, one act or two acts that ever equaled that in the 70s. And highly rated album. But, I mean, go down the track list. I mean, we played a couple of these. I mean, Mama, We're All Crazy Now is on
this.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. That
sound familiar?
Quiet Riot cover.
Oh, that shitty American band. Right?
Goodbye to Jane.
Now, I played that one on here. So, but what I'm going to play is I want to play... 50 million albums they sold.
Wow.
I just saw my notes. I forgot it to say that.
50 million.
Million freaking records,
Jesus.
Right? Yeah, man. But, gold in Australia within a week of its release.
Wow.
Dude, right? I mean, this is just like, hang on. Even Chris Gow liked it.
Chris Gow liked
hang
it.
Hang on. Yeah, hang on. I took a note on Chris Gow. Hang on 1 second. It is, you're going to dig this, actually. Quote, these guys aren't single specialists like Gary Glitter or, I insist, T-Rex. They deliver a whole album of boot boy anthems that are every bit as overpowering as has been reported, and also more fun. Reporters panic real easy. Naughty Holder can wake up the crazy in my neighborhood anytime he wants, but that doesn't mean I'm predicting Slade mania, not in a nation where Loggins and Messina are encouraged to sing about rock and roll.
That's a great
A-minus, right?
Wow.
So,
that's a stinging thing. Poor Kenny Loggins gets thrown under the bus.
Yeah, he's got to knock somebody's dick in the dirt.
Right.
He's not happy.
Right.
But I'm going to play, dude, Goodbye, Goodbye. It's just a heavy showcase. Remember, my theme is just great vocal performances. And this is Naughty Holder doing his growling best. And then, you know, he's kind of teasing, like he's going to go up and hit those super high Naughty Holder notes. And he doesn't, and he doesn't, and he doesn't. And he fucking does. And it's just great.
Go, he couldn't help himself.
He but had
this
to.
Is, yeah. So this is, man, this is probably one of my top five albums of all time, Slade by Slade.
They're heavier numbers there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of that slow, chung, chugga, chung, chugga, chung, yeah. Slow, gallopy number. But yeah, really growly and guttural from Naughty, you know, and then of course he takes you there at the end. But hey, real quick, I'm a dummy.
What'd you do?
80 dum dum. Ambrose Slade's album was Beginnings. That was their first album.
Yeah.
That was their Skinhead era.
Oh, okay.
That was Play It Loud.
Play
and
it
I knew
loud.
That, and okay. You know, I'm really high.
So the
facts ain't right.
The Skinhead one was Play It Loud.
Yes.
And the okay,
yeah, because
they're both
I was
worth
like,
checking out.
Well, the Skinhead
though.
Ones were their second one, and of course, it wouldn't be called Beginnings.
No, I guess not.
No, and I knew that as soon as I said
that
I went, I got that wrong.
That's
so,
up.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, for Slade, buy yourself a Slade record.
Yes, everybody should
buy
own.
Yourself all the Slade records.
I was gonna say, yeah, don't stop with just one. So let's move on to, let's go to Boston, A.D.
Hey, let's wicked
Mass.
Awesome.
What's
New
your
kids
car?
On the block.
Gotta find my car.
So we're gonna hear a new band here. Welcome to the show, a band called The Fools.
Your Fools.
And an album called Heavy Mental.
I like that.
So The Fools are, as I said, a Boston area pioneering punk and new wave band. The singer and guitarist started out as members of a band called The Rhythm Assholes in the mid-70s. And the group splintered into two different bands, both legendary Boston area bands. One was called The Nervous Eaters, and the other one's called The Fools.
I've heard of The Nervous Eaters.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is sort of like another band of that same era.
What year?
This is 1981 on EMI, and this stuff is happening. The Fools get together. Their first album comes out in 1980, and that's called Sold Out. And they're known for irreverent humor on stage and in song. And the first dent in the local scene was a parody of the song by the Talking Heads, Psycho Killer.
Yeah.
They did a parody on it called Psycho Chicken, which is awful.
Wow.
Just awful and stupid.
They released it on a record? Or?
Yeah, and they put it out on a little 45, and it became a local hit on the radio. And they followed it up with a kind of a straight up, still kind of irreverent, almost like the Tubes.
Right, okay, like sort of laced with deeper humor.
Yeah, yeah. It was sort of like this poppy reggae thing called It's a Night for Beautiful Girls. And that thing charts at 67. So it not only had local Boston area, but it was kind of spreading out, and it ends up dinging the charts at 67. So EMI comes calling. They're like, hey, sign right here, buddies.
Sure, and, yeah. You chart once, I want you.
Yeah, so they sign the deal with EMI, and they do two records, basically. And EMI puts them on the road opening for The Knack.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Gotcha,
first album's called Sold Out, and it contains the Psycho Chicken song and the reggae song and some other cool little power pop things. And they also open for Van Halen on the Fair Warning tour.
Ooh, oh, wow. How'd that go?
Not good.
I imagine that didn't go so well.
Not good at all. Well, mostly the singer claims that David Lee Roth was a real douche to them. He's like, I didn't have any problems with Eddie Van Halen. He seemed nice and friendly, but David Lee Roth, it was just like, you never knew what, from one day to the next, what you did wrong, and you're going to hear about it.
Wow.
Everybody came to see Eddie Van Halen, but Roth was running that show. He was running that backstage area. He got what he wanted, you know?
Wow.
So that's his take on it. The guy I'm speaking of is the singer, Mike Gerard, and he's written a book about his time in the band The Fools. I wish I'd have been able to get my hands on the book, because I guess there's a ton of great road stories in it. And you could read the first chapter, first 6-7 pages on Amazon. But
oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, something, I forget the title of the book, but if you just, Mike Gerard, G-I-R-A-R-D, you can find it. It's pretty interesting. It just talks about being on the road and going to that Big Texan in Amarillo. The Big Texan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the 78, if you can eat the steak, the 78-ounce steak.
Yeah. Have you done it?
I did it.
You did it? Seriously?
Oh, my God. Would you look at him?
What?
Yes.
They saw you coming in there going,
shoot. Get the T-shirt ready.
Yeah.
I got a couple questions for you then.
Okay.
How was the steak?
The steak was delicious.
Yeah?
For real?
It was good. Actually really a good steak.
Did it take him a long time to cook it and everything?
I have no idea.
How would
you
cook a steak that big?
You're probably gonna,
rare.
Plus, you know, in the oven, put it on the grill to get grill marks, and put it back in the oven again.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it was a good steak. My plans to continue driving home that night were flawed. there's no bathroom in my car.
Yeah. Did you? You get a free shirt, or do they take a picture?
They take a picture. You get a free shirt, and the picture goes up on the wall.
Nice. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Yes,
actually, Bear finished the steak and was like, do you got any fries or something else?
Yeah. I was 412 pounds then when I did that.
Wow, 412.
Yeah, hand me the dessert menu.
Yeah. The only person I knew bigger than me was my sister.
Wow, well, that's great. Bear's just raising his hand like, been there, done that.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah.
Been there, done that.
I couldn't even dream of that. That just hurts.
But yeah, so apparently they were pretty booze-addled and doped up and stuff on the road and all kinds of craziness. The singer would dress up like a nun and perform and just all kinds of weird shit. So So this is their second and last album for a major label. They soldiered on for a few more years and broke up. I think they had another record come out on an indie label called Show Us Your Nuts.
Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, Show Us Your Nuts.
You Are Nuts, yeah.
Yeah.
Show Us You Are Nuts, okay. Yeah.
Brilliant.
But obviously, yes. Show Us, yeah.
I just took my belt off.
Yeah.
Not now.
But they ended, of course, they broke up sometime in the 80s, but they reformed, and they're still playing to this day. And I was reading an interview with a couple of the guys. Mike is still the singer and stuff. And the interviewer asked the other guys in the band to describe Mike in one word. And the guitar player said his one word to describe Mike is debaucherist. Which is a great word. I'm a debaucherist. So we're going to hear the side one, track one on this one. It's called Mind Control. This song builds and builds and builds. I love how there's not much going on at the beginning of it. It's just sort of a driving beat with some stabby guitar chords and a eighth note Ian Hunter-esque piano.
Excellent.
But then as it goes, it just keeps layering and layering. It's got a great little, I don't know what you'd call this section, but almost like a pre-chorus and into a chorus. And it gets just bigger and bigger as it goes. And it's definitely one of the highlights on this album, which is a pretty fun little goofy record. I mean, it's not 100% on the money. I'd give it a B. Good solid
okay.
B. And I'm inclined to check out the first album because that's at the record store, too. I picked this up at the Zia's on Thunderbird.
Vinnie Poncia.
Oh, yeah.
Produced it.
A couple of things that keyed me into buying the record,
yeah,
first of all.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you about that, and I saw that, and I'm going, you didn't mention that, which made me then I'm going, you either didn't see that, but how could you not?
Yeah, that's the reason why
and,
I picked
and
it up.
And then my second quote, or my first question was, what, you know, I always go, when it's new, I always want to know how, whether they could... Where'd you get the notion?
Well, it was $2.99. I'm looking at it on the back of it. It says produced by Vinnie Poncia. I'm like, oh, it's 1981, and it's, you know, I'm listening to Kiss records,
right,
produced by,
yeah,
Vinnie Poncia at the time. And also look at the title of track two.
Dressed in White.
Yeah, I thought, we have a Crash Street Kids song called Dressed,
yeah,
in White.
Now,
I was,
wow,
like,
awesome.
I was like, hey, wait a minute. You know, not that they would be stealing it, of course. We would be stealing from them.
Yeah,
but I just thought it was interesting. It's such a weird title that they had a song called that, too. I'm like, all right. That's an omen for me to buy this record. So
definitely,
it's pretty cool.
And most of them don't look dorky enough.
Actually, what I would do is I would flip and I'd have that back cover photo of them on the cover of the record. I don't care for the cover at all.
But it's a takeoff of, you know.
Yeah.
So it sort of sets the theme for...
Mm-hmm.
What they're doing.
Right. So Mind Control by The Fools from the Heavy Mental album, 1981 on EMI Records. Let's check them out.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. We'll be right back.
There they are. That's The Fools. And the record is called Heavy Mental. The song, Mind Control, 1981. What'd you think?
It's all right. It's kind of club bandy, you know?
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Fun.
Yeah. Local band.
Yeah. Good beat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can see them touring with the Knack. That's a good little tour. I think they go well together.
Yeah, Rush, not so much.
No.
They toured with Rush as well.
They'd be a fun band to open for the B-52s or somebody
definitely.
That.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah. But they said Rush was great. But it was David Lee Roth that they had a problem with.
Oh, yeah. They toured with Rush. Amazing.
All right, AD, what you got?
Oh, wait.
Excuse me.
Almost made it.
Time out.
Made it across the state line, didn't I?
No.
What is it, Liz?
Well, I do believe there was a skip in that record, Ryan McKay.
It didn't skip at my house, but
well,
that damn Morgan
here.
Fisher turntable. Yeah, okay. What
Take
do I
Take your drink.
What is this here anyway?
Jameson.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah.
Are we out of dirty tequila?
We are out of dirty tequila.
Oh, thank God. How do we go through all that already?
We better take better care of our fucking records, apparently.
I guess so.
One skip equals one shot of dirty tequila.
Yeah, it does, my friend.
With my apologies to our listeners for having to endure a skip down the hatch with some Jameson as a punishment.
Poor you.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Poor Ryan.
I'll take a couple of those punishments.
Right.
Take it like a man, sir. Take it like a man.
Okay, AD, what you got?
Well, as I was saying before, I've got a theme in my little box here. So it's all about golden pipes, good singers, good vocal performances. Mm-hmm. And this is no different. This album comes to me courtesy of G-Man, Gary Gilson. Thank you for this. He was going through his records. He goes, I got two of them. I'm like, okay. He goes, because he saw it at a record store. You know, it's one of those things where you go, do I have this one? And you go, I used to, you know. But then you can't leave it there because you might not see it again for a while.
I've been noticing that happening to me more and more when I'm shopping for records. Like, I'll pull out a record. I'm like, wait, now, do I have this or don't I have this?
And you don't want to leave it there if you
right?
don't.
Exactly. Luckily, I've gotten lucky and I've not had it.
So this is one of Gary's doubles. Thank you for this. Dude, it's a really shit hot album. It's a really cool band that I had not heard of. I was familiar with the singer's name, but not familiar with the singer. It's a female singer. Lydia Pence is her name.
Okay.
I brought this album. I guess the best way for me to describe it is Mother's Finest with kick-ass horns.
Okay.
They're from Oakland. Some of the guys in the band were in between this band and Tower of Power, so they're shit hot.
Wow.
One of those Oakland soul, funk, rock bands that just rhythm section is stupid. Dude, I'm telling you.
No, you're stupid.
Everybody is so stupid. Dude, I mean, it is. This fucking thing, this band is tight. I mean, they got a four-piece rhythm section. So they got your guitar, bass, you got your keyboard, and it's either piano or organ, B3. You know, no synthesizer bullshit.
Okay,
right?
Good.
And drums, so that's it. So you
and
got
this
your,
is this 1972 as well?
This is 1972 as well.
Okay.
So Oakland, man, the shit's hot up there, you know, the funky, really kind of where rock is merging with funk and a lot of soul, you know, think Sly and the Family Stone, thank you very much, you know, really set the tone for rock meets soul in that way, and they brought the glam and the fucking style into it and shit like that, so think that, you know, but think a little bit more horn. So they got the four-piece rhythm section, then they got two trumpet players, it's a nine-piece band.
Okay.
And then they got a couple guys playing sax. One guy plays tenor the whole time, and the other guy switches from barry and tenor to
alto?
Flute.
Flute.
There's no
monster.
Flute.
There's no flute.
Flute is ass.
Hairy ass.
So, no, there's no flute in this song, right? I was careful to go over that.
Thank you very much.
So what I brought is, oops, I almost stabbed myself in the eye with the pen. I brought an album called First Taste of Sin by Cold Blood.
I don't know what this is. I've never heard of this.
Now, they're singing, produced by Donnie Hathaway.
Where do I know that name?
Donnie Hathaway did some soul. He was did some soul duets in the 70s. Remember Donnie Hathaway?
I remember that name.
Didn't he do some Diana Ross duets or something like that? Yeah. But I don't know if it's the same Donnie Hathaway, because I did research and Googled his name, and no discographies matched up. But so it's just weird. I looked for specifically Googling Cold Blood Donny Hathaway, and there was nothing on, you know, Donny Hathaway proper's discography about this, nor anything I went with Cold Blood search for was anything about who Donny Hathaway actually is. So, you know.
They got the picture on the back here. They've got, there's a 10-piece, 9-piece band, and then the back cover photo, they all have their wife and kids in the picture.
Oh, it's just like the Allman Brothers, family thing, or the...
Definitely taken, it looks like a Sears portrait where it's all in, it's in autumn, you know, the leaves have changed, leaves are on the ground.
Yeah.
It wasn't in Arizona.
Like a picture you'd hang over the brick fireplace in your cabin in the woods.
Right.
Kind of thing, look to it. But yeah. But it's kind of weird. This band has a weird thing. They were together for, they got together in, what was it, 69, right? And they just kind of got together, and they weren't together long. All they did was they went in and auditioned at the Fillmore West for Bill Graham, whatever, and he had a record label at the time, San Francisco Records. And within months, they were making their first record. Very soulful. Now, this is their, fourth record.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's weird. They put out six total. They put out three records, and then they put out an album called Lydia, but still under the name Cold Blood, almost like this other chick, Lydia. Lydia Pence being the singer. Their fourth album was called Lydia.
Interesting.
But the band was still Cold Blood, but and then they did a greatest hits thing. And then the band, quote unquote, went on hiatus. And I say that with quotes because they never made another record.
They're still on hiatus.
But they haven't broken up. But it's weird because every bio I went to, it said hiatus. I go, they just don't exist.
At some point, you go, it's over.
What have you done? Where's your record? Well, we're just taking a break.
Yeah, but it was 45 years you've been on a break.
73 and then 76. They put out another one after that called... They came back for before the big hiatus and put out one called Lydia Pence and Cold Blood.
Oh, they were trying to market her.
Yeah,
as the
and front. I guess no bueno, nothing happened, nothing floated. So they're like, okay, well, but I guess, apparently what happened then? I guess she got pregnant. She had a baby in the 80s and quit to be a mom. So God bless her for that. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Indeed.
Right. So she did that. And that's cool. That Patty. Whoa! Knocked over my shit here. Patty Smith did the same thing at one point in time.
Yeah, that's right.
Remember. That was kind of cool. So, So she kind of took that break. But apparently the band, I guess they're still playing
somewhere.
They're on hiatus, so they're not making records. I guess they'll do a gig now and then.
Probably just banging around the old Bay Area then, huh?
Yeah, it didn't really sell a lot of records. Yeah, and a couple of guys, like I said, were kind of bouncing back and forth in between Tower Power, doing gigs and playing with them and recording with them and stuff. So it's pretty interesting story. But this, this band is shit hot. And this chick's got, she's kind of got like a, like I said, kind of a Mother's Finest feel.
Okay.
She didn't go full throat like Joplin. I would say more like the chick in Smith. Or
who's Chicken Smith?
The chick. Well, you know, Chicken Smith is my favorite.
I know half of that.
Chicken Smith plays the jug down at the barn dancing.
I like how it was the Chicken Smith.
The chick.
No, you think
Smith.
I'm a different. I am the Chicken Smith.
Chicken
you know
Smith.
Me.
I know that feller.
the chick. The singer. The female singer in the band called Smith is what I'm trying to say.
Not a person that makes, I do really good chicken. I'm a chicken smith.
Yes,
blacksmith?
Yes. Right on for the blacksmith. Yeah.
Chicken smith.
Got to get some black in there somewhere.
So it's kind of weird. So it's like one of those things anyway. So, you know, they're on hiatus. They really didn't do much else. They just still exist.
Okay.
That's it. So that's all
day.
I got. But there's, yeah. So there's really nothing on them. One thing is pretty cool. The rhythm section now is shit hot. There's kind of a cool little rhythm break in here where they've got some additional players. And it's Coke and Pete Escovedo. Sheila E.'s father and uncle. The two brothers, Escovedo brothers. And they are killing killing it on percussion.
And that's on the song we're going to hear.
Yeah.
Which is called what?
Oh, I'm sorry. The one we're going to hear is Down to the Bone.
Down to the
Bone. Yeah, yeah. But it's got, dude, it's got some bitchin' guitar. You're going to love the guitar work. I'm telling you, it's Mother's Finest with horns. It's the rhythm is so tight. They're not afraid of a guitar solo in there. The harmonies are shit hot. Melody's cool. It's got a lot of soul. It's so Oakland at the time. But wow, I think it's cool. I if I had choice Tower Power in this band, I lean Cold Blood.
Wow. Because Tower Power is hot.
They're shit hot.
They're shit hot.
They're shit hot, absolutely.
Wow.
But this band, I think, with the vocals, and again, that's what my theme is, the vocals, and not only the lead vocal, but the harmonies, whoo, motherfucker. Yeah. So let's get into some.
This is gotta be good.
Let's get into some Cold Blood, Down to the Bone. You're going to dig this, man.
I'm going to give you my opinion after this set.
Okay. Yeah, let me know. You're going to dig it. Promise you.
Wow.
Double
that
wow.
That band's cooking.
Yeah.
Right?
Indeed.
Percolating.
You had a comment about the fade out?
Yeah. That is
epic,
the longest
long fade out.
An album unto itself.
Right, yeah. Side two is the song is side one. And then the fade out is side two of the album.
You know, I went to Subway out. And came back.
Yeah. So okay, go around the horn, Ryan. Yeah, you're in.
Yay. I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bear.
On the left hand we have Tower of Power.
Okay, right.
On the right hand we have
Cold Blood, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, your winner is Cold Blood.
Wow. Oh, come on.
You guys have lost
your minds.
Those vocals,
you've
man.
You've only heard one song.
You know what? Okay, let me say this.
Okay.
The whole record's that good.
All right, well, maybe we do have a good competition then.
Side one is definitely the stronger side. They've got, like I said, they've got 4 or 5 out. There are only going to be 3 called Cold Blood. The other one's going to be called Lydia. Then the other one's going to be called Lydia Penson Cold Blood. From what I understand, it's the first 3 that you got to have.
Okay.
So that's all I know. This is the 3rd.
Okay.
Awesome.
So
I love Tower of Power. I really do.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I do too.
This was
phenomenal. And I like Mother's Finest. If I have my choice between Tower of Power and Mother's Finest, I'd take Mother's Finest. So, and these
poor Tower Powers.
No. Listen, I like Tower Power. I love Tower Power.
Yeah.
But the vote, you know, to me, Mother's Finest has a more rock edge, so they win.
Yeah.
And this, I think the vocals are better, so they win.
Well,
and some of the guys are the same guys, so.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
No definitely offense. The rock edge. That's what makes the difference.
Yeah, I think so. You know, yeah, just my, that's my, you know, guitar loving self like that, you know?
Yeah.
But okay, so yeah.
Very
what
good.
What you got there, Rhino?
All right, well. Over the weekend, as I said at the top of the show, I was playing up in Pine, Arizona with Dylan, and we're driving back home, and Dylan has his music playing, and this song came on, and I'm like, who is this? And the song, I thought, was incredibly well written, and I knew it was a new, you could tell it was a new band, and he told me who it was, and he said he had the vinyl at home, so as soon as we get home, I'll let you borrow the vinyl. So that was just last night. And the record in question is this band called Fleet Foxes.
Okay.
And a newish band, sort of an indie folk band. That cover is...
That cover's badass.
I got some details on that cover. That is a really cool cover.
Nice.
One that you could stare at for hours. Fleet Foxes, and it's a self-titled album, comes out in 2008 on Sub Pop Records. We're going to hear a song called He Doesn't Know Why, end of side one. I think it's track 6 on side one. And this record's very interesting because it's what they did is they packaged on vinyl the album proper, and then you'll notice it's a 2-record set there, and the other record is their EP that came out a few months prior to this album coming out. So it includes an EP as well. So the main guy here is Robin Pecknold. He's the singer-songwriter, and the band is formed when Robin and his schoolmate Skylar began making music together. They're from Seattle,
okay,
or just outside one of the suburbs of Seattle, and they both have an appreciation for Bob Dylan, Neil Young, Brian Wilson, those kind of artists, but they're very eclectic. They're kind of like all over, as a good musician should be, right?
Right.
And so these two formed their first group as late teenagers around 2005, and the name of the band was The Pineapples. But apparently there was another band in town called The Pineapples.
No way.
In the same town?
Yes.
Well, back in the 80s, it was Magnum.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that was one. Or, yeah. And so they changed their name to Fleet Foxes. And they enlist the services of, I guess there's some connection, either a family or a friend connection, to a producer called Phil Eck, who worked with a band called Built to Spill, had a bunch of indie kind of hits with that. And another
He worked with Bobby Yuck.
Phil Eck.
And Tony Ew.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Aww.
Ew, Uck, and Eck.
Ew.
Aww.
So, yeah, and another band that Phil Eck did is another favorite of mine, a band called Band of Horses, which I freaking love that group. And this record is very reminiscent of Band of Horses, if you've ever heard of that group. But
have.
So this group helps, this guy, this Phil Eck, helps them record their first demo in 2006, which became their first EP, confusingly enough, called self-titled, you know, Fleet Foxes.
And it was receiving a lot of great press around their hometown of Seattle and eventually taking off big time on MySpace. Remember MySpace?
MySpace.
Oh, my God. Oh,
Liz still has her account.
I do.
I took over my grandmother's.
Did you?
When she passed away, I took her account over.
So it lives on.
Yes.
That's good.
That's awesome.
That's good. And so with all this great press and this online buzz, they get a deal with Sub Pop Records. And
ooh, that's a good label.
Yeah, and they brought with them that producer, Phil Ucker,
yeah,
to produce the second EP, Sun Giant, which is included in this package right here as a second disc, which they claim to be a quick release just to have a CD out for sale on tour. And so they haven't really fully realized their sound yet, even though the time lapse between the EP and this full-length album is only a few months. So I guess they've been recording this first album, the one you have in your hands there, prior to having the record deal. So they were paying for it themselves, and it was sort of like, going to not only the studio with this big-name producer guy, but they'd take the tapes home and they'd do stuff in their apartments to cut costs. So it's kind of like a scattershot deal. But, I mean, you'd never know it. I'm listening to the record when I found that research. I was like, really? Because the album sounds gorgeous. It's like, wow, they did a good job at home.
Nice.
So it's getting glowing reviews. It comes out and wound up on just about every best of list in 2008. And then what's interesting to note as well is it does really well over in England. And they have a huge, I mean, it was pretty done. It was good in the United States, but it was England where it was really popular. They really loved it over there. The album, to this day, worldwide, has sold close to 1 million copies.
Really?
It's a gold record in England. It sold like 250,000 in America. Yeah.
This is from 08.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And since this first full-length album, they've gone through a few personnel changes. But Robin and Skylar, the two guys, they're still the dudes. And they're on tour actually playing at Comerica Theater coming up in a couple months or something.
Oh, wow.
But they released a couple more albums. With one just came out this year. And I was listening to that one that just came out like in June of 2017. It's called Crack Up. And it's dark. It's melancholy. This record is a good, like Steven Seaborg said, you know, like you just fall into your couch or sink into your couch music. So yeah. It is that. There's a lot of reverb on stuff, but in a good way. It's very atmosphere.
Well, I keep going back to the Dylan and the Neil Young references and their influences and stuff, and I'm going, yeah, well, that's deep and ethereal in a weird, you know.
It is ethereal.
Dylan in his sort of his folky weird way, and Neil Young in his kind of, you know, kind of, it's a mood. It's a mood thing rather than a music in a weird way. Or not rather than, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. And let's talk about the cover. The cover is a painting that was done in 1559, and the name of the painting is Netherlandish Proverbs by Pieter Bruegel the Elder. And this painting hangs in a museum in Berlin, and they contacted him. Well, apparently one of those two guys in the group saw the painting in a book. His girlfriend had an art book, and he saw that painting. He's like, wow, that's really cool. And so they reached out to this museum, like, can we get our own picture of that, you know, or can we use a picture of that for our album cover? And they were very enthusiastic about it over there in Berlin. They even announced it in their local newsletter.
Really?
Yeah, banned to use this work from 1500.
Well, it looks like there's now I have a poster somewhere, and it might even be rolled up behind that speaker stack over
of Cheryl
there.
Of Cheryl Teagues, I know, I've seen
yes,
it.
Yes, yes. Well, it stuck to the Farrah.
Stuck to the Farrah. Oh, no, no.
But no, but it, and they were, it was called Proverbidiums, one word, Proverbidiums. And mm-hmm. It was similar, where each little scene they're acting out like a, like, don't throw the, there's a lady on the roof throwing out a baby with the bathwater. So yeah, all of them were, every little of these, is that what this is?
Yeah, absolutely is. There's approximately 112 identifiable proverbs and idioms in the scene. I bet what you have is the same artist.
Probably. It looks very, so when I saw that, I'm going, it's very familiar. And then at closer look, like the guy's cutting the pig, it looks like there's more than one way to skin a cat on here.
Yep.
I believe I found.
Arm to the teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's a guy in armor up to his teeth.
Digging one's own grave.
Yep. Yep. So there's a,
everybody in the village is a proverb or idiom.
Yeah, that one. It's a trip.
So you could stare at that for a while.
Yeah, I have been. If I'm seeming out of it, I'm looking at all these things.
Yeah, it's a really cool album cover for sure. Musically, one of the things I'm really struck by when listening to this record, and I really just heard it for the first time yesterday, so it's all very new to me. I've heard the name of the band and heard good things about this record, but hadn't really explored it. The guy has a real gift for writing melodies that just sort of drift in, but they make sense and they're very compelling, and it's really well done. I mean, again, it's a very sort of relaxing sink into the couch record, but it's so beautiful, like how he's written it. And so the song that I'm playing is called "He Doesn't Know Why." And what I noticed when I first heard it in Dylan's truck yesterday is that it never really resolves to the one in a traditional sense. So the one chord being like where it all comes home, where you feel like, okay, and that's now we've finished that musical statement.
That phrase is over, next
right.
phrase, right?
It does like a 4-5, 4-5, then a 2 yeah. a 6, and then a 2 a 3, 2 a 4.
And then bring it home, five. Johnny.
And then finally you get a 1, but it's like 1, 2, 3. Yeah, yeah. It's only there for like a half a measure.
Yeah, right.
And then so you wait around, and the melody over all this is just killer. And it's just sort of stream of consciousness sort of. It's just a great melody over top of all of that stuff that never resolves. But then he pays it off and does a huge one chord and a great melody over it. And the whole band has stopped and does like these hits. Boom, bump. And he's singing in a high register.
And hanging on the root.
Yeah, and then yeah. it goes to the 4, and he sings the same notes, which creates this major 7th
right,
chord.
Yeah,
it's like,
right.
okay, you win. The song is absolutely brilliant. So it's a self-titled record, name of the band. Fleet Foxes, June 2008. Let's check it out, AD. End of side one. I think it's track 6. Cool, there they are, Fleet wow. Foxes.
Nice.
Great very, song.
Very Brian Wilson-y. Very,
yeah.
The,
in
certainly
my
the
room-y, but not
Yeah.
Quite.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that influence there. So, yeah. And that's the most 60s Baroque pop of the entire record. Everything else is very ethereal. That's a great word you used earlier. But you can hear the sort of American Gothic type of folk. I don't know if the best way to describe it. You know, indie folk, you know, where it gets almost proggy, you know. The new album is a prog album. I mean, it's like, it's so Velvet Underground, kind of. I mean, it is really dark and, really cool, though.
That's Elliot Smith. You like that heroin rock.
I do.
If it's heroin, not even rock, kind of heroin.
If it's done well.
Mood
and it's,
music, yeah.
The heroin or the rock?
No, just the rock. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he likes the music. I used to do. I did the drugs.
Yes. I know enough to stay away from that shit.
Yeah. I'll just take the music.
Yes, thank you.
You can have the rest.
All right, AD, what are you going to take us home with?
Well, it's weird. We've kind of followed a little trend today, even though we didn't mean to as well. I'm kind of mimicking you. I'm your evil musical doppelganger. You put on a band with funky, groovy horns at the beginning, and I put on a band with funky, groovy horns, and then you put on this, you know, mood music to close it out with. You know, let's dim the lights in here and light the candles. And I kind of did the same thing. Another record here that Gary Gilson had doubles of. Oh, actually, no, this one he had one, but his copy, the jacket was beat up. The record's in great shape, but he found another one. So it was like, here. So, he ended up getting doubles, but he's like, you got to have this. And he kept mentioning the name of it beforehand. Have you ever heard of this? And I was over at his house before he bought that second copy, and he put it on. I'm like, what the fuck? It's like, brilliant. And, of course, I recognized the voice immediately. And I'm like, what? Like, I've never heard this. And he's like, well, you probably haven't, you know, and because the band really went nowhere. So thank you, Gary Gilson, again for this. This band was formed by a Brit and a Scotsman in Sydney, Australia in 1965. And one of these guys played guitar, the Scotsman, Mick Liber. And our Scotsman was this guy, Frank Kenner. So
you're right over there?
Yeah.
What's going on?
The story
is having a stroke there for a second.
Well, he gets No, I'm reading.
Okay.
It's Frank Kenner. So they get together with local Australian drummer, and now so they're in Australia and they get together with this guy. They get this surf band going, right? But then
all right, mate.
But then this guy gets deported. For drugs and shit. So.
Oh, I was going to say, how do you get kicked out of Australia?
Oh, good day.
Well, yeah, Australia's kind of Britain's prison, right?
That's what I thought. Like, that's where England was putting their ne'er-do-wells in Australia.
Nope, you have them back. We don't need them here. Crikey.
We've got enough of them, mate.
Yep, he's done. Don't you have them back? And a lot of them.
There goes our Australian and British audience.
Yeah, so.
They've checked out.
So apparently he goes over to... back to England and befriends, first of all, let me back that up. He goes back, his dad is like a very well-to-do, very well-known inventor.
In Australia?
No, or in England. So he goes back to England.
Dad's back there.
You know, daddy, you know, I guess his dad had some money or whatever.
Something awful has happened.
Yeah. and I guess for whatever reason, that was the year of the World's Fair, and it was in London. So his dad had all these exhibitions. Well, he's been exiled. He's got to go back home. And it's just like, but he goes, well, daddy, you know, I need some money for my friend's band. And it's his friend Lemmy. It's his friend Lemmy.
Okay.
And so all of a sudden he's like, well, I'm not going to be a singer anymore. Fuck you guys. I'm back in England and I'm going to manage and promote Motorhead.
Okay.
That's this guy's route. So then this guy, let's just follow this guy because this could get very disjointed. Let's just follow this guy. So then that happens. Of course, then he gets plugged in with the L.A. scene, ends up going to L.A.
So the same guy exiled from Australia with Rich Daddy now lives in L.A.
Yep. Well, he got Motorhead going.
He got Motorhead started.
And then moves to L.A. and becomes a promoter out there and ends up doing really well. And his main claim to fame is, and they called him English Frank. His main claim to fame was promoting Spinal Tap's first live concert.
Wow. Like,
how Spinal Tap is that?
Tap into America.
Like, right? Yeah. So that's just kind of cool. I mean, that's just... So anyway, he's not on this album, but he was in this band.
Why are we talking about him?
Because he formed this band. He was at the beginning
of this
band. Okay, so that's
prior to being kicked out of Australia.
Right. So that's one guy's interesting story behind this band. Speaking of interesting stories, I might as well tell you the name of the band. It's an interesting name, and then there's two more interesting stories in here.
Oh, excellent.
One attached to the song I'm going to play. This is a band called Python Legion. Jackson.
Okay.
Wow. I can only say wow.
Be careful. The top of that is ripped. The jacket's in bad shape. The top is completely opened up, right?
Got it.
So,
okay. He looks a little like Mark Bowen.
Yeah, I was going to say, he looks like Mark Bowen.
The album is called In a Broken Dream. It came out on GNP Crescendo Records in 1972. We talked about that guy, English Frank. So now... Let's talk about this Mike Leiber guy ended up doing some stuff. He ended up on with Billy Thorpe, Children of the Sun, and then another guy in the band, the bass player who's on this record, who look at the bottom right corner, kind of looks like the
the curly haired guy.
Yeah, that's Joe X Doobie's drunken cousin.
Yeah, that guy.
And the guy on the left is the Geico caveman. Right?
What is who?
The Geico Call insurance caveman.
Rightfully called.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Right? Okay. But that guy in the bottom left is, Jeff Cahill, who was the bass player for the Easy Beats.
Oh, Friday on My Mind.
Yep, who played with Vanda and Young.
Yeah.
You know, of AC/DC.
So there's a lot of all kinds of guests on here that I'm sure you're going to get to.
Exactly. So let me tell you about, you tell me the main one.
Rod Stewart sings
on this. Let's talk about Rod Stewart. Okay, so here's the deal. Here's the deal with this band. They've got all these people in and out of the band. The band was only together 5 years. They had like 18 members in and out of the band. And like everybody in this band went on to do something else, came from somewhere else, never ended up in that band. That's their only freaking record ever. It didn't do anything because people were just kind of going in. It's like in, around, and through Python Lee Jackson. And Python Lee Jackson's record came out after the band, quote, proper, broke up, left Australia, moved to England because there was nothing there. So, okay, let's get to Rod Stewart. So they leave Australia.
So how's he getting mixed up in this?
Okay, the band puts out three singles, can't get arrested.
In Australia.
In Australia. So they're like, oh, sawed it. So they went to England, right? maybe we can get some of English Frank's dad's money. I don't know. So they end up in England. So they're there, and they meet this young kid, Rod Stewart. Oh, he can sing a bit. Rod, let's get him in and do a track, right? So he comes in, little 22-year-old, whatever, Rod Stewart comes in, and he sings three tracks.
He sings three songs on this album?
Yeah. And they're going, well, that's really good. And the management's going, no, I don't know, whatever, you know. And so, right? So they shelve it. Now, they get this record. The only reason they get the record is because apparently they played a shit hot show, and John Peel, the BBC famous BBC DJ, sees him play, right? And John Peel, he had that show, and he was on the Beeb, and everybody got him on there, and so Peel sees him, and he signs him, and does these three songs with Rod Stewart.
Wow. Okay.
But you know, nothing ever happened. So you know, a couple years later, a guy buys the tapes from him. Oh, I'll take those, and then I guess they go, wait, you got those Rod Stewart tapes?
You got a tape of Rod Stewart singing in your band? Let's put it out.
We should put out a record.
Yeah.
And so they did. So they built this album. The fucking title track is the one Rod Stewart. So now the reason they put it out, and this came out in 72, they waited till 72 only, and it wasn't going to be released. But when You Wear It Well came out and Rod Stewart had a worldwide hit with it, they went,
now.
Yeah. Exactly. So,
and it was not released when it was recorded.
No.
When was it recorded? In like 68?
68, yeah. Okay. The three Rod Stewart songs were recorded in 68. I think the tapes were bought in 1970. And just like, oh, hold on to these motherfuckers. Yeah. I guess at the time, now remember, Rod Stewart's playing with the Faces, right? Wasn't he?
Yeah, Jeff Beck group.
Yeah, Jeff Beck, 70? Yeah, 70 was Jeff Beck, right?
69, something like that.
So, So yeah. So he's going, wow. this Rod Stewart guy might be. I'll just.
So the Mark Bolan looking guy on the cover,
yeah,
what's he
who's
do?
That?
Who is this?
I guess that's the main guy. There is no Python Lee Jackson. That's that main guy. That's our Mike Leiber guy.
Huh. Well, that's our Scotsman. Very confusing.
Our Scotsman. No, that's what I'm saying. Money. That's what I'm saying. Everybody that formed the band isn't in the band except for that Mike Leiber guy. Right?
Okay.
He's the only bloke in it, well, still in it, right?
Right.
And so, but everybody else scrammed and did great things and other things. This band fizzled out. But I got to tell you, first of all, the three Rod Stewart songs are damn good. And Ryan, the last one on side one is a Rod Stewart song, right?
It's just called The Blues.
Yeah, you know what song that is, dude? Serendipitously?
What?
What B.B. King song was I going to play when you brought in...
Oh, How Blue Can You Get?
That's that song. It's a different title.
Shit.
Wow. So they didn't have to pay B.B. King? God damn it.
Right?
B.B.'s mom. Right? B.B., my baby daddy.
So they...
baby, so, just like him.
So... So I just have to play the title track. It's fucking beautiful. Rod Stewart takes this song, and it's so beautifully melodic. It is. You talk about ethereal, so moody. This song, you want to make some LUFNV, man. This song is the one to do it to. It's one of those things that just the melody. He sings it. He sings it way behind the beat. You know, mm-hmm. He kind of waits to deliver the line, and he's not pushing. That's when he could really, really sing before it got a little too throaty, and, you know.
He's a great singer, man.
I would honestly say this might be the sweetest track I've ever heard Rod Stewart sing, and I think you might agree with that.
Sweeter than Hot Legs?
A little. Just a little.
Sweeter than Passion from the 80s?
Passion! Sweeter than Betty Davis Eyes?
That's not.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of.
Sweeter than.
Sweeter than. Do you think?
Turn around,
sexy.
Turn around, bright eyes.
What's the other one?
If it now and then.
Sweeter than Total Eclipse of the Heart.
So anyway, let's. So Gary, thank you for this album. It's a great, great record, man. It came out like I said, 72. This is In a Broken Dream from Python Lee Jackson's In a Broken Dream record. It was produced by Mickey Dallin, who was the guy who bought the tapes from John Peel. Yeah,
he produced the tapes.
Oh yeah, he produced his fucking record too. He goes, and I'll be producing that if you want the tapes.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, so showbiz shenanigans. But David Bentley, and again with my theme tonight, 1972, but more importantly, Golden Pipes. This is breathtaking. Rod Stewart does an incredible, beautiful job on this.
Spend my time drinking wine, feeling fine, waiting here to find the sign that I can understand. Yes, I am. In the days between the hours, ivory towers, bloody flowers, push their heads into the air. I don't care if I ever know. There I go. Pad B. before my eyes. Paper cries, telling lies. The promises you gave from the grave of a broken heart. Every day I spend my time drinking wine, feeling fine, waiting here to find the sign that I can understand. Yes, I am.
That was really tasty.
Right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Classic. Classic.
How good is that?
That's yummy. Great. That was good.
Liz
had multiple
like
orgasms.
Like warm syrup.
Take it easy, Liz.
But yeah. Actually, there was a point that I failed to make that I did in my research, but you caught up with that. What was the? So he was young.
Yeah, he was young.
Looking for work. So yeah. And they were like, you know, like however they got together. So what was the payment? What did they pay him for the sessions?
He got paid a set of car seat covers.
That was it, huh?
Yeah, that's all you get.
Wow.
Right?
So in the car seat just to cover.
So he didn't make any money on the re-release in 72.
No, and they're selling records against his release, too. It's like,
yeah. Oh, competing in the marketplace.
Yeah, the name of this album should have been Exploit, Exploit, Exploit. But that's actually a great record. It's a really good record. Even the stuff that... Now, granted, the lead singer of Python, Lee Jackson, they could use a Rod Stewart. You know, the
every band could use a Rod Stewart.
Sure, yeah, sure.
There's not too many of those to go around.
But, you know, the rest of the band's great. The songs are good. If you see the record, it's going to be $2.99 somewhere. It's worth picking up.
Yeah.
Just for those Rod Stewart stuff. But that's beautiful. It's called In a Broken Dream. The name of the band is Python Lee Jackson. Mm. Came out in 1972. Golden voice, man.
Good stuff. Voice back
I'll
too,
pick it
man.
Up if yeah. I see it.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, I'll even sure. pick it up.
Oh, even better. All right. Well, the mystery boxes are empty, AD.
They are indeed, and they were eclectic and wild.
Episode 140 is roasting to a nice, big, warm pillow of two great songs to finish out the night.
Right? I know. That was so comfy.
Rocking episode, and then we just kind of brought it in nice and gently. That's odd for us. Usually it careens.
It was a safe landing, a gentle landing.
Let's all hug.
Yes.
I think we just did, yes. It's beautiful in here now.
Well, let's thank Liz Morgan for running the controls tonight. Fantastic, as always.
You're welcome.
Did you enjoy the records tonight there, Liz? Okay. Take it easy. All right. To you too. AD's getting a beer. But the show's over. He just got a beer.
He'll drink it before we're finished.
Yeah. Well, we got 2 more minutes left.
Well, in those 2 minutes, let's thank Bear for hanging out with us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, and thank you for the ribs. As soon as we're shutting this thing down, it's rib time for this kid.
I may have to go in for another rib.
Oh, delish.
How much for one rib?
Pre-cooked or cooked?
We didn't we didn't really talk too much about your what you're up to. I mean, you do some stand-up stuff. You do some DJing around the valley. And you're also, are you still in the bounty hunting business?
I am definitely still in the fugitive recovery business, which is what the fancy word for bounty hunting.
Cool. Fugitive recovery.
Fugitive recovery.
Is South that why you're here? It's just to pick up AD?
Oh, shit.
All right, boys, move in.
I fell for that 3 times in the 80s.
Right.
Has it been that long? I thought I recognized you.
That's why I'm here. My cover's blown. Can you imagine me undercover?
Yeah.
I would not. I'm 6 foot six, 310 pounds, size 18 shoe. I would not be good undercover. Who's that? Oh, what the fuck you mean, who's that? Everybody knows who that is.
It's hard to miss. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for hanging out with us tonight.
Thank you for having me, brother. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Just a really fun to have you on. I'm surprised we found a mic to actually capture. I don't know if that mic even captures all the low notes that comes out of Bear.
All the cymbals and gongs are hanging on the wall. When you talk, they just reverberate. The room just fills up. It's awesome, man. It's
Can you have
awesome.
A kick drum mic?
I'm
next
vibrating.
Time, next time Bear comes on, just put a kick drum mic on.
Yeah,
right?
One of large diaphragm mics. That thing will just be moving. Yeah, that's a killer.
Nothing but low end.
Yeah.
Number love, guys. Yeah. I sure
yeah.
enjoy myself.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You
yeah,
you.
All, door's always open, man.
I'll bring more food.
Oh.
Yum.
Door's definitely open. Absolutely, yeah.
I got a key now.
Yeah. Official key holder.
So thank you guys very much for listening in to this episode here, number 140, officially in the books. And also going over to the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, and you can click on an Amazon banner there. If you enjoyed some of the music tonight, you want to pick up maybe that Fleet Foxes record or that Python Lee Jackson record or whatever that we played, you can get it through Amazon, of course, mm-hmm. and go to our website first, click through. And it doesn't cost you a penny, but we get a little kickback. We get to, wet our beak, so to speak. Thanks to Amazon. So go ahead and do that. And if you're wanting to support the show in another way, you can leave a review on iTunes. Always good to drop over on iTunes and leave a glowing review that just... hearts and flowers pop out of it when you read it.
We've done 140 episodes of this, and I would never remember that even still.
That doesn't surprise me. You just grabbed another beer.
I wonder why.
That's right. That's right. Well, the mystery boxes are empty, so it's time to reach into the 6 inches of mixing board dust to unplug the microphones, roll up the liquor-soaked cables, and head out the bum and hooker-dented security door to freedom. Sweet freedom. But before I go, I'll bid a fond fare thee well to my dusty and liquor-soaked pal, A.D. Adams.
Well, yeah, thanks, Ry. Well, you know what? It is time to shut the lights down here at this old shithole called Shab. Or as we like to say, it's time for the cockroaches to come back out and play. So through the buzz-inducing haze lingering in the air, I can see just enough to know that my pal and co-host Ryan McKay is still in the building. Poor Ryan McKay. Yeah. Great
get
show.
Me out of here.
Hey.
Get me out of here. I gotta get the hell out of here.
I'm coming, mother.
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. Nameonanything.com.
You got a pretty mouth.